Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in Radio DMG may or may not be the views and opinions of the DMGI's family of sites. All music used in this podcast is the property of whoever made it, and no copyright infringement is intended. God bless this albatross, and hold on tight for the awesome you're about to receive.
It's good to be the king.
And welcome to Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and today is December 25th, 2011, and you are listening to a 100% newsity program. This is actually 100% newsity. This is the second of three generic Christmas episodes that we're doing, what you're listening to right now. So, the first one was Radio DMG, kind of long, we had a little surprise in it, then I actually did some reading, and then this one, we're going to talk a little bit of newsity, what I've been playing and what I've been watching. I think what we've done now, that we've split the shows into all these weird little offshoots, is that I finally clarified what I want out of Radio DMG. You see, Radio DMG will be interviews and content like that, long form, long shows. 100% newsity will be what I've been playing, my comments on the various news, and Glorious Excess will be a bunch of stuff, like archive stuff, really. We may have a couple more shows of that in the future, depending on, like, if we find, I think episode two of Radio DMG, the one that we did where there were three people. I don't remember if I have all the parts to that. Oh, well, if I can't reconstruct it, oh, well. But, yeah, what I'm going to be doing with Glorious Excess is it's content that's related to DMG Ice and Radio DMG and other aspects of the Radio DMG mythos, if you will. So look forward to that. That one's going to be a bit long, and it's going to be awesome. But this episode, well, Merry Christmas, first and foremost. Didn't really get anything for Christmas, because the problem is that I didn't really need anything for Christmas. I bought stuff for my family, which I'll send out. They bought stuff for me, which they haven't sent out yet. But that'll eventually make it here. Problem is, a lot of the Christmas stuff I wanted, or rather the stuff I wanted for Christmas, I ended up purchasing, thanks to wonderful sales. So I'm going to talk about what it is I've been playing recently, and what I've been watching, reading, and listening to, just so that you, my dear readers, can be informed of that. But first, let's get to the newsity. There was a lot of news. In fact, almost as if in response to my complaint that there wasn't a lot of newsity in the last episode or so, later that day, Nintendo announced all sorts of release dates. They announced that the CirclePad Pro would be coming to the United States, but only as a GameStop exclusive, and it would be $19.99, and only available at, like I said, GameStop. Which is so, well, it's like they're de-emphasizing the unit so that people don't get too worried about it. It's like they're making the optional attachment optional. Does this bode well for a future redesign? Actually, no. It kind of doesn't. What it means is that, yeah, they made this little adjustment, which will be used by certain games, but they understand that the people who would purchase this particular item go, or are like, they go to GameStop or online. They understand what it is. Putting this out into Walmart would just confuse people. Retailers don't really want that. But hey, with GameStop, they can keep it to a minimum. This would be like selling, I don't know, the Rumble Pack attachment only at GameStop, which they didn't, but they sold it in such limited quantities for the DS that really the only place to get it was GameStop. This would be like making, a light blue Wii Walmart exclusive. Wait, they did that too. Or selling certain games, which they feel there's not enough of an audience over here for, like Xenoblade. I mean, yeah, that's going to be a cool game. I'm going to pick it up. But when you look at how much it costs to localize an item, especially an RPG where there's literally books and books of text that you have to translate, all sorts of cultural differences and jokes you have to take into account and adapt, there is a lot that goes into that. And sometimes it's not worth it to translate and put out a 40 to 60 hour game if the audience isn't going to be there. You have to make your revenue back. If you don't make your revenue back, you end up like Sega. So you have to understand that. And putting Xenoblade out in a limited run at GameStop only is one way that they dealt with that. Honestly, not my choice, but it's a game for the Wii. I cover handhelds. And I'm looking forward to covering another handheld that's coming out very soon in the United States. Actually, it's in February. And Sony announced that the PS Vita, which launches in February, will have 20 retail games at launch, 5 PSN-only games at launch, and 10 more in launch window. So about 35 games within the first 4 months. They range from $9.99 for some of the download titles to $49.99 for most of the retail titles. The ones that are coming out are Escape Plan, Hot Shots Golf, World Invitational, Hustle Kings, Little Deviants, Mod Nation Racers, Road Trip, Super Stardust Delta, Uncharted Golden Abyss, Wipeout 2048, Army Corps of Hell, Asphalt Injection, Ben 10 Galactic Racing, BlazBlue Continuum Shift Extend, Dungeon Hunter Alliance, Dynasty Warriors Next, F1 2011, EA Sports FIFA, Soccer, Lumen's Electronic Symphony, Michael Jackson The Experience, Plants vs. Zombies, Rayman Origins, Shinobito 2 Revenge of Zen, Tales of Space Mutant Blobs, Touch My Katamari, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, Virtua Tennis 4 World Tour Edition. That's a good amount of games. Looking through that, there's about maybe 3 I'm interested in, but none of them are ones I would ever pay full price for. And several of them are coming out for the 3DS as well, and I'm like, do I want to pick up this on 3DS, or do I want to pick it up on Vita? I already have a 3DS. I don't need to spend almost $300 to $350 or maybe even $400 to pick up a Vita at this point. So, yeah. Well, good luck with that launch lineup there, Sony. I mean, wow, that's a good amount of stuff. 20 games at launch and 35 games total within the first 4 months. Pretty decent launch. We'll see how it sells over here. Problem is that the problem with it is that I've discovered most people don't actually understand the difference between the PlayStation Vita and the PSP when it comes to it's like, oh, okay, it's supposed to be more powerful. They kind of get that, but they don't understand why they should, and it's kind of hard to sell the Vita to an audience, except for like those people who are like, I'm a hardcore gamer. I like Medal of Honor. Oh, which is pretty much what people are. Yeah. So anyways, the problem is trying to sell people on the Vita and why they should be spending so much money on the system. Well, especially in comparison to several different tablets. I mean, if you're a person who wants to read ebooks, can you read those on the PlayStation Vita? Nope. Some of the apps that are out there, there's a couple. Oh yeah, it's launching with 5 PSN games. Yay, 5 games. None of the PlayStation 1 titles. And only, like, right now it looks like very, very few of the PSP titles will be downloadable to it. And PlayStation Minis are right out. So I'm like, okay, you're launching this with no games at $250. Your best title is a fighting game. Where have I seen this before? Wait, I think the Nintendo 3DS launched this way, and we all know how well it did during its launch, don't you? Don't we? Oh, by the way, the numbers are out in Japan for the PlayStation Vita launch. It sold a little bit more, quite a bit more than the original PlayStation Portable. In fact, the PlayStation Vita, let me check real quick. It was in my notes. And it was in my notes. I accidentally deleted that note somewhere. It's it launched at I guess the best way you could say is that while it launched more units than the original PlayStation Portable, it sold over 320,000 units, which is good. They put out about 500,000 plus units. Okay, actually closer to 700,000 units. And they sold about 320,000 units, so about close to half of what they put out there. Not bad. And it still gets beaten by the 3DS, which sold 370,000 units at launch. And it completely decimates the original PSP. Which I can attest, I would say would make sense. So yeah, it launched in Japan, sold reasonably. In fact, I saw several people on NeoGAF with 3 or 4 different units. Like they'd go and they'd buy multiple units. I'm not sure why they would do that. And I feel that it's kind of, let's see, how many of these ended up on eBay? Actually quite a good bit. There's no way to go out and get an accurate number for it, but yeah, 320,000 isn't bad. We'll see where it goes from there. So yeah. The Vita, it's going to do something. I'll end up getting one because, you know, portables, but it'll be interesting to see where this is going. Right out the gate, I guess you could say it's a strong opening. It's just not DS or 3DS strong. And the future for it looks, well, we'll have to reserve our judgment for the PlayStation Vita to see what they bring to us in E3 of 2012. If Sony doesn't bring an A game or several A games to the PlayStation Vita at E3 in 2012, I think we can go ahead and categorize that the PlayStation Vita will be dead in the market by 2014. I mean, you'll probably be able to go and pick them up pretty cheap in 2014, because if they don't bring an A game to E3 2012, the system's dead. It's not like they have the franchises to back everything up, though. I mean, yeah, there's Resistance. God of War they could use. Uncharted, but Uncharted doesn't do the numbers of a Mario or a Zelda. If they're trying to compete with the Nintendo 3DS, they've got a bit to go. If they're trying to compete with tablets, they're going for the completely wrong crowd. What Sony needs to do is focus their efforts on the PlayStation Vita away from the "it only does everything" aspect. They need to put this as what it is: a pure gaming console, which will allow you to play console quality games, like in terms of graphics, not in terms of content, on the go for 5 to 10 minutes. The battery life's not that bad. But yeah, let's move on a bit to another little handheld with some pretty interesting battery life. The Nintendo 3DS. Well, a little after that last episode where I was commenting about the lack of news, Nintendo announced the final 5 Game Boy Advance titles. In fact, they released them, and it was pretty great. What they did is they put out several different... Okay, here's the titles that they put out. The Legend of Zelda Minish Cap. Metroid Fusion. F-Zero Maximum Velocity. Donkey Kong... Mario vs. Donkey Kong. Fire Emblem The Sacred Stones. Yoshi's Island Super Mario Advance 3. WarioWare Incorporated Mega Micro Games. Wario Land 4. Mario Kart Super Circuit. And Kirby and the Amazing Mirror. They put out... Well, every single one of those is pretty good. I've actually went back through and was playing through WarioWare. And, one of the first ones I went into was WarioWare. And then Yoshi's Island. And I actually have not touched some of the Ambassador games. I've been playing a little bit of Yoshi's Island. Because I like the challenge of that game. And they down-pitched all the crying. And they fixed some of the little issues that it had on the Super Nintendo on the Game Boy Advance version and added more levels and tighter controls. But yeah, going back to WarioWare, it occurs to me that WarioWare is a pretty great satire. Basic point in WarioWare, Wario notices that video games make a lot of money. He's lazy, so he makes crappy cell phone games. No, literally, there's a level in here where you're bombarded with a little cell phone that switches to the different games. And I'm like, this is a bit of a commentary about the upcoming smartphone market before the smartphone market was there. That yes, what you're going to get with those particular devices is a bunch of terrible little short one concept games. But you're going to get a lot of them, which is what you see on the iOS. You see a lot of terrible games that are almost exactly the same with like just reskinned graphics, bad controls, and the fact that the gems in there are just like really few and far between. I mean, for every Tiny Wings and Angry Birds or so, you'll get hundreds upon hundreds of just bad ideas, badly made product, and apps. Wow, we really need like the 900th dictionary app. Excellent. Ooh, you made a calculator, but this one's pink. Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting going back into WarioWare. Awesome game. Still a great game. I recommend people check it out. If you weren't an ambassador, they'll eventually put those out, just like they did like the NES titles. Which, by the way, they announced and released the first NES Virtual Console title on the 3DS in Japan for the general public. And that would be The Legend of Zelda, the very first one. It now has save states. It's now fully featured. The emulation's a little bit better. And the icon for it is a TV with a Famicom next to it playing the game. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. And I can't wait to see what they do with the other ones. Once they hit some of the ones that are two-player at the same time, they'll work on the wireless adaptation for it. Because you have to, in order to get this to work, they're going to have to work on emulating the second controller to a different system, as well as, in the future, Game Link. Once you get the Game Link updates... Games like Radar Mission or Fortified Zone. Okay, as soon as Fortified Zone has actual Game Link support patched into it, buy that because it's better as a co-op game. But yes, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this with the Virtual Console in 2012. Especially since we're still waiting on Game Gear and we're still waiting on TurboGrafx-16. Minish Cap, going back to Minish Cap was a little odd. Love the graphics, the storyline's pretty good. The music, though, is a sore point for me, because there's not a lot of original compositions in Minish Cap. In fact, that kind of feels a little lazy. That said, I love the art style, I love the story, the whole, it's kind of a weird cross between fantasy epic adventure and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Or rather, We Shrunk Link. And it works. It's not a game with Ganon in it, but it is a game with a lot of interesting little devices and dungeons, and a really great addition to my icon pile here on the Nintendo 3DS. I played through that game so much on the Game Boy Advance that I got all of the figurines in it, and I got all of the, I unlocked the sound test, I found everything in it, and I'm looking forward to doing the same thing on the Nintendo 3DS. Wario Land 4, which was actually my least favorite of the Wario Land games, it's still a good game though. I mean, Wario Land 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all great games, and Wario Land VB for the Virtual Boy is also a great game. I would feel that, well, Wario Land 4 to me is a lesser title than previous Wario Land games, it's still an excellent example of a good and well-made side-scroller. The other ones, Maximum Velocity and Mario Kart Super Circuit, the Mario Kart Super Circuit was kind of before the emphasis on drifting, but you can still kind of do drifting by like tapping the A button. So you're going to be tapping the A buttons or the brakes around corners. It's a little bit harder than I remember. Then I went back and played it on a normal Game Boy Advance, and I realized something about it. With the Game Boy Advance, the controls weren't nearly as sensitive as they are on the 3DS. Weird. F-Zero Maximum Velocity, this was the first time I played it in English, and it's okay. It's F-Zero. I haven't touched Kirby and the Amazing Mirror yet. I love the old Game Boy Advance game for it, and I'm looking forward to playing through that one and Mario vs. Donkey Kong, and going back to Yoshi's Island, Super Mario Advance 3, and Fire Emblem The Sacred Stones in the near future. Fire Emblem, The Sacred Stones, I played a good amount of it, and then I let my little sister borrow it, and she beat the game and all this stuff and unlocked all sorts of things for it. But the problem with Sacred Stones is there are some really poor parts of the script. Yes, the main character is interesting, but man, sometimes you just want to smack her in the face. You want to punch her. It's like, no, why are you doing that? You're an idiot. Don't do that. Don't give that to that person. They are not a good person. What are you thinking? And that happens. Oh, well. Oof. But the other one, like Metroid Fusion is a pretty good game. It's just most people, I think the problem with the Metroid series is that Metroid 3 is in that series. And when Super Metroid, which is considered to be one of the best side-scrolling games ever made, is in your franchise, the rest of the franchise kind of gets, it rains on your parade. It makes everything else look a little bit dimmer. The brightest bulb makes everything else look dimmer. And unfortunately, Super Metroid set an exceedingly high bar. Now, Metroid Fusion, has some very tense moments in it. And I'm looking forward to ripping through that one again with headphones and just cursing some of the bosses in it. So, that's it on the Game Boy Advance Ambassador titles. Let's see. What came out recently? Oh, well, let's see. They released Tetris on the Nintendo Virtual Console on the 3DS. And the fact that they were able to iron all that out and release it gives me hope for Faceball and for some other titles which are a little bit trickier. Now, they also put out Swap Note, which is absolutely free, and it's an emailing program. Well, a picture emailing program. Think like PictoChat, but not as interactive, not like as meaning you're not going back and forth instantly with somebody in a messenger format. This is like sending email via SpotPass or StreetPass. I'm going to use it for StreetPass as a way of advertising, and SpotPass as a way of annoying people and commenting and such. I've already gotten Christmas cards from it, and that's just great. In order to send a SpotPass to somebody, you have to have their email address, meaning you have to have their friend code, you know, from their 3DS. If they're on your friends list, you can send them stuff. You can attach audio files to it up to about 5 seconds, pictures, all sorts of extra stuff that I haven't unlocked yet. But yeah, there's a lot of little options in this. It's fairly full-featured, pretty decent. I whipped out the old DSi XL stylus for it instead of using the stylus that's attached to the 3DS, because honestly, I love the feel of the DSi XL stylus when I'm drawing something, because I feel it's more accurate, because it's more like a pencil. It's more like a tablet pencil, and that works for me. Swapnote is free. I definitely recommend people download it. It's great. It's a pretty great little app, and it's free. Come on, you've got no excuse to not download this. Also out was oh yeah, by the way, if you download the Virtual Console Tetris, keep in mind this one has no instant drops, there's no holding, and there's no infinite rotation. We have a review of it on DMGice.com in our Game Boy section, and you should check it out. It's an A title. Unfortunately, because they haven't patched multiplayer into Game Boy emulation yet for the Nintendo 3DS, the excellent multiplayer mode is not available yet. But that shouldn't matter too much, because for once, I can save my high scores. I just hit save state, and I just keep going off of my save state, and I can save my high scores in Tetris. I have proof now. Years and years ago, you'd get like a ridiculously high score in Tetris and you want to show people, but the only way to do that was to take a poor picture of the bad screen that was on the original Game Boy. And now I don't have to. I can save the state. It's there. My high score is saved. Love it. That alone makes it kind of worth the price. And the fact that it is Tetris. It's a good version of Tetris. The physics are right. The challenge is right. It ramps up properly. Not a lot of flash in this one, but a whole lot of soul. Whole lot of heart. Whole lot of really good gameplay. Now, also out is Mighty Switch Force. Or, because the audio for it, well, let me get to there a second. Now let me move that a little bit, maybe so you can hear it better. Do 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 do.
Mighty Switch Force!
Yeah, it's saying Mighty Switch Force, but the first time I heard it, the first thing that came to my mind was, it sounds like they're saying Miley Switch Force. And I want to know who Miley Switch Force is. That sounds like an interesting character. Is that the main character here? Oh, wait, no, the main character is named Officer Wagon. Apparently, the Hooligan sisters have just escaped custody and are wreaking havoc all over planet land. And, here's kind of your character's name is Officer Wagon, and that, I don't know, I mean, you know, Matt Bozon, Vert, the staff over at Way Forward, I really like your side-scrolling games. You've got some great concepts in here, but I'm not going to call your main character Officer Wagon. I'm sorry. I just think that's kind of that's a stupid name. I don't like that name that much. Nope. So instead, I'm going to call her Miley Switchforce, because to me, that's what it sounds like they're saying. So, yeah. But the basic idea of the game is you go from, you explore these little levels. You explore the levels in a side-scrolling perspective using a couple powers. You've got a gun, and you have the ability to push parts of the landscape into the background or into the foreground. Now, like different little blocks, you can bring them out or bring them forward. And the idea is to use those to get past different little puzzles and traps and manipulate objects to find a certain amount of the hooligan sisters that are hiding in that level. Once you've collected that amount, your a giant robot mecha thing shows up and you can go ahead and get into that and finish that level. Each of the levels has a timer. You have infinite time to beat it. However, there is a par for you to shoot to, like, oh, try and beat this level in a 1 minute 20 seconds type deal. That's actually pretty great. The animation is fine. The graphics are good. The music is excellent. The concept is sound. The 3D is actually pretty good in this, because some enemies that you'll run into won't be hurt by your blaster. So you need to push them in front of something that you've pushed into the background. Then bring that background object into the foreground, crushing them against the front of the screen, which is pretty funny. The Mighty series, Mighty Flip Champs, Mighty Milky Way, and Mighty Switch Force has kind of a naughty sense of humor, I guess is the best way to put it. And it's pretty funny squashing things against your screen. Overall, I like it. I suggest people download it. There's a lot of great games coming out on the 3DS eShop that are side-scrolling. I mean, you need to pick up anyone worth their salt as a gamer and a fan of side-scrolling games. You need to pick up, let's see, Mighty Flip Champs, Mighty Milky Way, Mighty Switch Force, Shantae Risky's Revenge, Cave Story, which comes out next week on Thursday. You need to pick up Super Mario Land, Super Mario Land 2, Metroid 2. You need to pick up Donkey Kong 94, which is excellent. You need to pick up Rise of the Minis, Minis March Again, although it's kind of a Lemmings type game, more less of a side scroller. You need to pick up The Mutant Muds, which will be coming out soon. You also need to pick up Ghost Series 10 Second Run. You need to pick up Soul of Darkness. You need to pick up Dark Void Zero. You need to pick up, well, there's just a string of titles that you need to pick up for that. Overall, Mighty Switch Force, excellent game. I'm having some fun with that one. And the soundtrack's available online, and it's worth picking up too. I'm just really kind of happy with the amount of stuff that's coming out for this system. I mean, there's 3D classics, Kirby's Adventure, which is worthwhile. Pushmo, which is okay. On Pushmo, I'm climbing the custom levels that you can make in this are excellent. I'm climbing on Shantae right now. It's funny. And it's somebody went through the effort to make these levels, and I've made a couple levels myself, and the community for Pushmo is excellent. There's even a Twitter feed where you can have daily Pushmo puzzles. I think it's like at daily Pushmo, and the idea and the concept and just everything about that community has been great so far. Freaky Forms is pretty cool, just not as popular as Pushmo. There's a lot on the horizon that makes this pretty good. Oh, if you like Pokemon, there was a Pokemon title announced to be shown at Jump Fiesta, and that would be Pokemon Nobunga's Ambition It's a crossover title between the two franchises. It's also the first strategy game. It's a turn-based strategy game for Pokemon. It should be interesting. There are about 13 main games in the Nobunga's Ambition series, and the U.S. received about 9 of them across various platforms, including the Sega Genesis. And I think iOS has one, but I'm not sure. And the PC. But yeah, some of the odd spin-off titles also came here, so there's a chance we could get this game here. But I expect them to change the title a little bit. Because, while they can sell Pokemon, Nobunga's Ambition is a little bit of a tougher sell amongst more casual fans. So I expect to see this game, if it comes over here, under a different title, like Pokemon Legend or something like that. Pokemon Legends or Legends of Ancient Warriors. Yeah, Pokemon Legends of Ancient Warriors would be an excellent title for this particular crossover, because hey, nothing says awesome strategy like, well, the Romance of the Three Kingdoms and Pokemon. It's just a weird crossover they announced. Oh, by the way, this is for people in Europe. Sony is not releasing the 32 gig memory card for the Vita in Europe at launch due to supplies. And I feel that they could have avoided the whole thing by just going with SD cards. I mean, come on. They could even do SDXC support. Because, I mean, SD cards, they're the cheapest to make. They're the cheapest to get. They're the most plentiful. And with the SDXC, you can get up to about a terabyte of information into those. The only reason that Sony wanted to do that, it's like, is because the only thing that matters to them is cash. If you're a Sony Vita fan in Europe, you're not getting the 32 gigabyte cards at launch, which is tragedy. But I'm sure there will be more supplies for it a little bit after that. I mean, they can't not put that out, right? I mean, it's Sony. They probably don't. Anywho, that's about... Oh, yes, there's more, too. Nintendo released the timeline for The Legend of Zelda, and it is insane. The previously accepted timeline, not the official one, was that you had Skyward Sword, and then somewhere along there, Minish Cap, etc. But the new timeline takes into account alternate endings and bad endings to some of these. Ocarina of Time has a thing where if you get to the very last boss and you die, there's a slight variation on an ending in there. Now, apparently, people used to think that Ocarina of Time split the series into two timelines. One for adult Link when you leave, and one for a child Link when you at the time that you come back. Oddly enough, there's also an alternate timeline where Link dies, and there's a bunch of major games on that timeline. I'll get into the whole timeline discussion for it on some other episode of Radio DMG or 100% Newsity. It just depends. Wow. Cool thing about it is that Nintendo actually left a lot of spaces open for so many different variations. Like, if they went with the idea that a timeline is created if Link dies, the timeline where Link fails and gets in the Seven Sages imprison Ganon in the Imprisoning Wars, that's the one where A Link to the Past, Oracle of Ages Seasons, Link's Awakening, and The Legend of Zelda, the first one, and The Adventure of Link happen. Now, in The Adventure of Link, if you die, Ganon returns. What gets to me, though, is... judging from where we are on the karmic triangle, I guess you could say, of Link and Zelda and the curse that's on them, well, if both Link and Zelda died in The Adventure of Link, if Link dies, Zelda still remains asleep or dead, I guess you could say. And then Ganon returns. What occurs to me is at that point, unless all three are killed or die, the cycle doesn't really continue, does it? So if we look at where the timeline would split after Adventure of Link, there's room for another Legend of Zelda game which would have a completely new hero or heroine in it. Looking at this timeline, there are just, if you go down the Adult Link timeline, which has Wind Waker, Phantom Hourglass, and Spirit Tracks, that one there has an opening for technology. They could make a game in there that has trains and airships and gunpowder. If you go at the Young Link one, you've got Majora's Mask, then Twilight Princess, then Four Swords Adventure, and that one's not as exciting as, like, what they could do after Spirit Tracks, or what they could do after an alternate, after a bad ending in Adventure of Link. There's also a bunch of stuff between Skyward Sword and the Minish Cap, where they could introduce the Picori. They could actually introduce Ganon to the series after Skyward Sword, because I guess I could mention spoilers here, but Ganon isn't in Skyward Sword. I know, there are some people who are now all completely shocked. They're like, what? You mean it's a game like the Minish Cap, or Four Swords, or Majora's Mask, or Oracle of Ages and Seasons, or Phantom Hourglass, or Spirit Tracks, where it's not about Ganon and Link and Zelda? Actually, if I just sold you on the idea of playing Skyward Sword and checking it out, I hope I did, because Skyward Sword is pretty good. But yeah, there's a lot that could happen after that. I mean, there's still the matter of who sealed Majora into the mask. There's the earlier stuff with the Twilight Realm, which isn't really really explained in Twilight Princess. There's some earlier stories that need to be told. There's a lot more to do with this franchise, and I can't wait to see what they do with it. But yeah, there's one more thing I need to mention. On the 27th of December, we're going to have another 100% Newsday, because Nintendo of Japan announced that they will be doing another Nintendo Direct webcast on the 27th of December. The last one was when they announced Monster Hunter 3G, Monster Hunter 4, and a ton of games for 3DS. There's no word yet on what the announcement will be, but it looks like they're going to be laying out several plans for next year's 3DS lineup. And I'm like, so you're going to tell us when you're going to give us more details on the Wii U, and you're just devoting another direct webcast to, oh, guess what? Here's some more new stuff for the 3DS, and here's some release dates for games like Animal Crossing or Fire Emblem. And I'm like, okay, thank you. I'll take it. Worst case scenario would be that they announce a revision. But, well, we'll see. We'll have to put together like some type of, it doesn't matter anyways. By the time we know, I'll just make a 100% Newsday show and talk about it. That's the 27th of this month, and I can't wait. It'll be great. Bring it on, Nintendo. I can't wait to see what type of news you're going to be announcing. Also, apparently the 3DS and the Wii U will be at GDC, and apparently the 3DS is going to have some type of showing at CES. I'm not sure of what. So we'll keep that in mind. But yeah, the 27th of December is another Nintendo Direct webcast. So yeah, that's it. We are caught up on the news. So, what do you want to do? I don't know. Actually, before I end this particular show out, I just would like to wish you all a Merry Christmas and congratulate you on not being dragged away by Krampus. Oh, I was going to mention what I've been watching and reading and such. I've been reading through quite a few old books. I'm holding in my hands a book from 1902 called In the Days of Giants by Abby Farwell Brown. I will be reading some of these stories in Holding the Bridge, and they are stories of Odin and Thor. So, hell yeah. We've got some stuff from like older children's books about Paul Revere and Abraham Lincoln. And, there's just some great stuff that we've got set up for you. And if you don't mind me reading to you, you're going to like it. Because, hey, sometimes it's best to dive into original source material, like I said. Sometimes the original source material is a lot better than adaptations of it. And this also brings me to, I guess I could talk a little bit about, what I've been watching recently. For Christmas, I didn't really watch Christmassy movies. The most Christmassy movie I watched was a little bit of Joy X Noel, which I'll finish at some point. That's the World War I movie about the Christmas Day truce. Really good so far. But I watched through Lars von Trier's Antichrist, and I also watched through Trollhunter, which is a Nordish film about that's kind of shot kind of Cloverfield or Blair Witch style or Wreck style in about these people making a documentary about bear hunting who end up meeting this guy who hunts trolls for a living. That one, the special effects are a little cheesy here and there, but that was a really entertaining movie, especially after slogging through Lars von Trier's awful mess of a movie. Oh, wow, that's shocking. No, that's not really shocking. You see, I'm a critic of movies, and I also enjoy both terrible movies and excellent movies. I know the difference between the two. And I look at things from all sorts of different technical standpoints. Now, Lars von Trier, the director of Dogville, and his most recent thing being Melancholia, is an interesting director who likes to take horrible subjects. And Antichrist is that. What's funny about Antichrist is that, well, the name would have religious connotations. It's really about the failure of psychology. In fact, it's so blatantly anti-psychology that at one point one of the characters mentions Freud is dead, which is kind of an appropriate thing for it. Then it kind of, after about a really solid first half of the movie with some interesting camera angles and some interesting, if not a little bit extreme, takes on subjects, fairly, very well acted. William Dafoe's excellent in this, and then it just kind of devolves into wanting to be kind of devolves into Martyrs or the Human Centipede, and isn't good. Okay, you can use shock in your movie to an effect. I mean, you see that in Straw Dogs or I Spit on Your Grave or let's see, what's a good movie that had a good amount of shock value? Okay, Old Boy. The Vengeance trilogy is amazing. Go check out like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Old Boy, and Lady Vengeance. That director, his movies like JSA or I'm a Cyborg, but That's Okay, Thirst, all excellent films and really good, outstanding examples of cinema. And they use gore to an effective note. You can use gore and shocking content in a way that affects the audience in a better way than just revulsion or disgust. Now, there's people who are like, oh, that was so horrible and disgusting. No, the whole point of, you have to have a point to your violence. There needs to be a beauty in your violence. You look at movies like Pulp Fiction or Reservoir Dogs, they just kind of explode out onto the screen because the violence is used in a way that fits it. I think the best example I can think of for use of creative violence comes from the movie All Quiet on the Western Front, where one of the characters, in kind of a pristine moment on the battlefield, starts reaching toward a butterfly that he sees. And the consequences of this are interesting. And the idea with violence is you want to draw people in to... Violence only works in a movie if it's presented in a way where what's happening there has to evoke something other than disgust or terror. Terror is kind of hard, and disgust is also kind of hard. I mean, you can throw all sorts of stuff up there, but eventually you become something cheesy if you do it wrong. If you look at movies like Irreversible, where there's violence used to show a story or to show a conflict in a way, like, I think of Irreversible as kind of the same way, what is the name of that one? It's, the movie with Stella in it, let me think for a second. A Streetcar Named Desire. A Streetcar Named Desire and Irreversible have kind of the same undertones, but the way they're used is different. In Irreversible, it's used as a way of shocking you or so. In Streetcar Named Desire, this type of event isn't shown, it's more implied. And the more implied event makes you feel sorry for the characters in this. It makes it a more hurtful, a more gut-wrenching experience. With movies like Old Boy or Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, the violence that happens is a peak before a denouement. Something is revealed in that. In Antichrist, the violence is used as kind of a way to get to where somewhere is. Like, it's part of the journey. It's not a climax, and therefore it loses part of the punch it could have. Oh, wow, that disemboweling fox has turned to the main character and says, "Chaos reigns!" in a terrifying voice. I almost laughed at that. And then some of the later stuff in it that's supposed to be the example of gratuitous sexual violence, I was just like, okay. But creative violence can be good in a movie if it's used in a creative way. And I felt that Lars von Trier, I hope he has better luck, had better luck with Melancholia, which I'd like to see sometime. That's about a rogue planet crashing into the Earth and how much it depresses people in the last couple days, or rather months, of their existence. Makes sense. I mean, if you know the world is inevitably going to end, what do you do? That kind of conflict can bring out something interesting if you're doing it the right way. I haven't seen Melancholia yet, but it's on my list of things to see, along with, say, Young Adult and a couple of other films that came out this year. Some that came out this year I do recommend people see. I liked Hugo. We Bought a Zoo was a cute little family film. If you have kids, go ahead and take them to that, or take them to The Muppets, because The Muppet movie is excellent for kids. And Hugo is even better. Unfortunately, I think that some of the more serious tones of that particular movie may be lost in some of the audience. If you've got kids who are like, have a little bit of trouble concentrating on a story, take them to Arthur Christmas. Don't take them to that Chipmunks movie or anything. I've heard some good reviews about Sherlock Holmes. I'll probably check it out at some point. Mission Impossible 4, the only reason to see that is, one, Brad Bird is directing it, and he made Ratatouille, The Incredibles, and and The Iron Giant. This guy is great. The only reason they made a fourth one is because he said he would direct it. Now, with Tom Cruise, I could take or leave the whole thing with Tom Cruise. People are like, well, Tom Cruise is a jerk. So, Lars von Trier is a Nazi. Francis Ford Coppola is a sick pervert. Woody Allen married a kid. Yeah. You need to separate the artists from the art. I mean, if someone told you that, like, Descartes or wait, not Descartes. Salvador Dali used to eat his own excrement, but his paintings are good. It's interesting. Pablo Picasso was a crazed stalker, but his artwork is good. Mozart was a pervert. These are people who you look at what they, you have to separate the art from the artist. And if you're not able to do that, that's kind of a bit sad because you'll miss out on a lot of good stuff. So, yeah, despite having Tom Cruise in it, I'm actually looking forward to finally, eventually, getting to check out Mission Impossible 4. I like that it's detached from the previous movies, and looking forward to that. Let's see. For 2012, there's a good amount of stuff that I'd like to get into and talk about, but I'll talk about that on another one. This episode's kind of run a little bit long. So, Merry Christmas, everybody. You got to hear me rant about all sorts of things for a while. Merry Christmas. God bless you. And may Krampus not drag you into the streets. Bah! Good night.
Christmas Eve, children fear his name. He looks a lot like Beelzebub, but they are not the same. He travels round with Santa Claus, Saint Nick ain't his friend. He comes from the Northern Alps of rural Switzerland. Because he's Krampus, Krampus, I'm telling you all about Krampus, Krampus, Krampus. Swing your birch switch high. With matted fur and sheep's horns, frankly dear, he smells. Accompanied by the melody of rusty chains and bells. He'll scoop you up and throw you in his nasty burlap sack. He rears back with a cane and switch and takes a yuletide whack. Krampus, Krampus, don't you know about Krampus, 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 swing your birch switch high. No Xbox games or candy canes made of peppermint. He brings the pain of another cane of corporal punishment. So if the kids misbehave, you do well to remember to don the garb of Krampus on the 5th of December. That's the traditional day for us to celebrate. Krampus, Krampus, look out kids, he's Krampus, 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 swing your birch switch high. Krampus, Krampus, he's the anti-Santy Krampus, 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 swing your birch switch high.
Merry Krampus, everybody.